This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The White House confidentially reviewed documents that revealed extensive efforts to generate an after-the-fact justification for U.S. President Trump's decision to hold up military aid to Ukraine, according to Washington Post. AP correspondent Matt Small.
The newspaper, citing three people familiar with the records, reports the research was done by the White House Counsel's Office. Among the hundreds of documents found, emails between acting chief of staff Mick Mulvaney and White House budget officials seeking to provide an explanation for the withholding of nearly $400 million in security assistance. The Post also reports that a person briefed on the matter said White House lawyers are expressing concern that the review turned up some unflattering and potentially embarrassing email exchanges. Matt Small, Washington.
A federal judge has ordered former White House counsel Don McGahn to appear before Congress in a setback to President Trump's effort to keep his top aides from testifying in the House impeachment inquiry. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
The former White House counsel was a vital witness in Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election meddling and President Trump's efforts to squash that probe. In interviews with Mueller's team, McGahn described the president calling him at home in June of 2017, directing him to tell the Justice Department that Mueller had conflicts of interest and should be removed. Mueller's report said McGahn declined the command, deciding that he would resign rather than carry it out. After the episode became public, Mueller's report said the president demanded McGahn dispute news reports and questioned why he had taken notes of their conversations. Ben Thomas, Washington.
China's Vice Premier Liu He, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin held a phone call on issues related to a Phase 1 trade agreement on Tuesday. That's according to China's Commerce Ministry. And also London's Transit Authority on Monday refused to renew Uber's license to operate there. This is VOA News. The U.S. Supreme Court says that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg returned to the court after a health scare over the weekend. AP correspondent Jennifer King.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is back after a two-night stay in the hospital. The Supreme Court says the 86-year-old justice is attending an annual fall classical music program that she's presided over for more than 10 years. Ginsburg was taken to Johns Hopkins Hospital on Friday with a fever and chills. She was treated for a possible infection with intravenous antibiotics and fluids. The justice has had cancer four times, twice in the past year. She underwent radiation treatment in August for a tumor on her pancreas and had surgery last December to remove a growth on her lung. Jennifer King, Washington.
As the Pope visits Japan to campaign against nuclear weapons, abuse cases roil to the church in his home country, Argentina. AP correspondent Walter Ratcliffe.
An Argentine court has convicted two priests of abusing deaf children at a Catholic-run school. Each of the priests were sentenced to more than four decades in prison. In another case, an Argentine bishop once close to the Pope has announced he would arrive back in the country Tuesday to respond to prosecutors' allegations of sex abuse. The attorney for Bishop Gustavo Zanchetta says the bishop will fully cooperate with authorities. A prosecutor accuses the bishop of aggravated continuous sexual assault of two adult seminarians. He has denied the charges. I'm Walter Ratliff.
Two people were killed in clashes with police in eastern Congo Monday after protesters in the town of Beni set fire to the mayor's office and several UN buildings. The protesters are angry over a new round of violence by suspected Islamist rebels. The U.S. has called its ambassador to South Sudan back to Washington for consultations. This as Washington reevaluates its relationship with the country after a delay in implementing a fragile peace deal. A K-pop singer, Kuhara, was found dead in her home on Sunday. Fans led an emotional tribute for her in South Korea's capital. We get more from Michelle Hennessy with Reuters.
A tearful memorial for K-pop star Kuhara on Monday. Fans showed up in Seoul to mourn the death of the 28-year-old singer. Ku was found dead in her home in the South Korean capital on Sunday, according to a local news agency. The late singer was a former member of Kara, one of the first female K-pop bands to make it on the international stage. In May this year, she was hospitalized after being found unconscious in her home. A month later, she spoke out on the difficulties of overcoming depression and pleaded for positivity on social media.
That is Reuters' Michelle Hennessy. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, November 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN appeals for calm in the DRC following violent attacks on its mission there.
The UN peacekeeping mission, the MONUSCO in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, is calling for calm and responsibility as violent protests continue in Beni in the country's northeast.
Five schools have reopened in Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions. Malawi's government denies it failed to protect human rights defenders from attacks. Ghana's Year of Return tourism campaign helps boost international arrivals in the country, and there is a likelihood of a runoff election in Guinea-Bissau.
The electoral demography kind of give you this proof that no one can win at the first time or having 51% of the global votes. So, yes, there will be a second round.
Amadou Jamanka is a senior manager at the Guinea-Bissau National Television, and pregnant women in Zimbabwe are delivering in unsafe conditions amid a struggling healthcare system. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, also known as MONUSCO, has appealed for calm and responsibility as violent protests continue in the town of Beni in the northeastern part of the country. This after protesters stormed the UN offices in Beni on Monday, angered by UN failure to stop an armed group that killed 8 civilians on Sunday. Reports quoting residents say several offices at the MONUSCO headquarters were set on fire and looted. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric says the UN understands the anger of the people of Beni and will work closely with authorities to find solutions.
The UN peacekeeping mission there, MONUSCO, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, is calling for calm and responsibility as violent protests continue in Beni in the country's northeast. The UN peacekeeping office in Beni was damaged after an attack, and staff members have been redeployed to other sites for their safety. At the invitation of the government, the Secretary General's Special Representative, Leila Zerugi, took part today in a meeting of the National Security Council chaired by the President with ministers and military leaders. She stressed that she understood the people's anger and frustration after further deadly attacks by militia known as the Allied Democratic Forces, otherwise known as the ADF. The mission will work closely with the authorities to jointly find solutions for the people of Beni. The UN peacekeeping mission is also concerned about both the dissemination and misinformation and calls for violence that have been seen on social media. The mission calls on all political, religious, and media leaders to support a return to calm, which is necessary both to fight the ADF and to continue to respond to Ebola. Just to note that there are 557 UN peacekeepers from Malawi stationed in Beni, as well as a foreign police unit from India with about 150 officers. There are also 150 Tanzanian peacekeepers who are stationed at the airport.
Stephane Dujarric, the spokesman for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Vote counting continues in Guinea-Bissau following Sunday's presidential election. Incumbent President José Mário Vaz of the ruling African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, also known as PAIGC, is seeking re-election for a second and final 5-year term. His chief competitor is former Prime Minister Domingos Simão Pereira, one of 10 other candidates challenging President Vaz. Amadou Jamanka is senior manager at the Guinea-Bissau National Television, says based on preliminary results released so far, it appears 5 candidates might qualify for a runoff on November 29. He says the PAIGC, which has easily won elections since independence, is now suffering from internal conflicts.
This first result will be surprising for a lot of people. I think it will be the first time where PIGC, the major party, will face the most difficult election in their history. PIGC always won the elections. That's because they may have a lot of confusion, internal crisis, but they always found a way in the end of the day to unify against everything and everyone. But this time things are different. Since crisis in 2015, where PIGC kicked out some of its militants because at the time they doesn't vote in the government program at the National Assembly. So that decision kind of divided the major party in two major parts. In this situation, no one could win completely in the first round without having a second round, because the electoral demography kind of give you this proof that no one can win at the first time or having 51% of the global votes. So, yes, there will be a second round.
As you said, Amadou, there is a likelihood that there is going to be a second round. If that is the case, who do you think might emerge as the eventual winner?
It's a little bit difficult to say now, but we can say Nunu Gomes Nabiang, who is APU candidate and also supported by PRS, he gonna decide who will be the next president of Republic. No matter what, if he support Domingos Simões Pereira, he will win. But also, if he support Umar Sissoko Embalo, he will win too. But the probability appoint that he is about to support Umar Sissoko Embalo, because last week they kind of come to agreement by deciding that no matter what, who between them went to the second round, they will all support him.
Did any of the candidates complain about fraud in the electoral process so far?
Yes, there was a little bit complainment. Mostly the current president, José Mário Vaz, his director of campaign, he complained that there was an attempt to manipulate system, attempt to cheat in some vote assemblies. But the international observers say that this complaint wasn't significant.
Amadou Jamanka is the senior manager at the Guinea-Bissau National Television. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bissau. In Cameroon, five schools have reopened in the rest of English-speaking regions after separatists shuttered them 4 years ago. The schools' reopening comes after the government dispatched so-called peace caravans to discuss the outcome of a national dialogue aimed at resolving the country's ongoing separatist crisis. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on how locals are trying to get on with their lives.
These are the voices of hundreds of school children, their parents and teachers at the campus of a government school in Tabinkeng, a village in the English-speaking northwest region of Cameroon. Among the children who are happy to see their peers, teachers and institution after close to 4 years is 14-year-old Peter Mokeng. He says he has been longing for his education.
I'm tired of going to work in the cassava farm all the time. I want to go to school to become a nurse and help people who have been wounded and suffering.
Three of the school's 14 teachers are present. Geography teacher Godlove Tamfu says he decided to return after peace caravans sent by Prime Minister Joseph John Guti to their localities convinced them that the government, in organizing a major national dialogue, was committed to solving the grievances of English speakers who constitute a minority in the country that also counts French as an official language.
We are determined to send our children to school. There is nothing that's going to frighten us any longer. And I think that any teacher who is ready to come should come.
Tamfu, his colleagues, parents and the school children are asking for additional security around the campuses. They have created local militias to inform the police when people with questionable motives are in their village. Markets too are becoming busier. Madeleine Table, a 51-year-old mother of five who lost her son and husband in the separatist war, says she decided to return to a poultry shop because her children need food. She says she cannot continue waiting for sporadic humanitarian assistance. Tebe says they urgently need peace because they are tired of the killings and the sufferings they have been subdued to for long. She says she cannot continue staying at home and being unable to take care of her family since her husband's death. The government says at least 200 of the more than 4,500 schools that were either sealed or occupied by separatist fighters have been reopened, and troops have been deployed to protect the teachers and students from the separatists. Southwest Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai says 30% of businesses that were closed in the towns have been reopened, but that the situation is a concern in most villages that fighters still occupy. He says people started returning to their businesses after the government organized the national dialogue.
The Southwest region is recovering, many internally displaced coming back to their villages. The activities are resuming in some enterprises. The businesses too seem to move well. So we have hope that the situation is really improving.
Bilai says it is too soon to tell how many people have gone back to their villages. Separatists have on social media said the returns are possible because they have changed strategy and will only attack military posts and people caught collaborating with the central government in Yaoundé, which the separatists describe as annexation force. Last month, Cameroon organized the national dialogue to solve the crisis and decide to give special status to the English-speaking regions. The government says parliament will vote this year on a law to determine the special status. The dialogue has also led to the release of more than 300 English speakers who were arrested and charged with terrorism. Violence erupted in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2016 when teachers and lawyers protested alleged discrimination at the hands of the French-speaking majority. The government responded with a crackdown that sparked an armed movement for an independent English-speaking state. The separatists began to attack schools, kidnapping teachers and students, while vowing to make the regions ungovernable. The United Nations says the conflict has killed close to 3,000 people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Northwestern Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 26th, Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Malawi's information minister has denied accusations that he has failed to ensure an inquiry into attacks against leaders of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, the HRDC, a political pressure group. Mark Botomani says the administration has demonstrated its commitment to ensure citizens are protected. Backed by opposition parties, the HRDC has been organizing a series of demonstrations across the country demanding the resignation or firing of Malawi Electoral Commission Chairperson Justice Jean Ansah. The group says Ansah bungled the May 21st presidential election and cannot be trusted to administer credible future elections. Information Minister Mark Botomani tells viewers Peter Clote that the Malawian police are investigating the recent surge in attacks.
As government, we do not agree with those assertions to say that government has failed to investigate and bring to light the attacks that have happened recently. And all these are currently being investigated by the Malawi Police Service. So for them to come out and say that the government has failed to investigate these matters, it is not right. And obviously, as government, we cannot agree with them.
Well, some critics of the government are saying that these sharp increase in attacks is as a result of the disputed elections, and that it appears that the government has failed to keep its core mandate, which is to protect life and property, and that even the attacks on those people who are organizing these demonstrations is an indictment on the government. What's your response to that?
The genesis of all these attacks and all these violence acts that have been happening, the violent demonstrations that have been organized by the HRDC.
Is the government ready to have the Public Affairs Committee mediate on the talks to ease or resolve the rising political tension in the country?
You held His Excellency the President when he just returned from Sochi in Russia. He made a statement that him as a president and as government, he's ready, to sit down and dialogue with whomsoever is concerned about the situation that is happening in the country. And for all we know as government, the president stands by that statement which he made, because he is a peace builder. He's supposed to be the one leading, you know, in building the peace. So we stand by that.
Talking about dialogue, is the president and his government ready to hold talks without preconditions, even with the demand by organizers of these series of demonstrations demanding the resignation or firing of the chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission?
Our expectation, Peter, is that whoever is interested in building peace or sustaining our peace in this country is coming without conditions. Because what we are interested in as Malawians is to make sure that the peace that is prevailing in this country currently should be sustained. That's our interest. Government, you know, is not putting conditions on the same. But you must know that as government, we have said, and we are saying it again, that we do not see any merit in demanding for the resignation of Dr. Jane Anser as chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission. And we stand by that.
Mark Botomani is the Malawi's information minister. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Lilongwe. As Zimbabwe's healthcare system collapses amid medical worker strikes, some women are being forced to rely on midwives and give birth in unsanitary conditions, which experts say put the mother and the child at risk of infections. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe's clinics have often been forced to suspend operations since medical workers went on strike to push for better wages in September. Pregnant women have been turning to midwives to deliver their babies, explains Esther Zinyoro Gwenya, who is a midwife in one of Harare's poorest suburbs, Mbare. She says, "I ask each expecting mother to bring a razor blade, a pin for the baby's navel, and cotton. Nothing untoward has happened. It's an easy task. After the baby is delivered, I ask the mother to go into my bedroom to rest while I take care of the next one," she says. The 74-year-old Signora Gwenya says she has already delivered about 250 babies in November. While she says all mothers and babies survived, the lack of sanitation means a higher risk of infection. It is also a symptom of the ailing state of health care in the country, says Dr. Tawanda Zakada from the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association.
Well, it's a sad situation that we find ourselves in, whereby women are now giving birth in a place that's not sterile, that doesn't even meet the minimum World Health Organization's requirements for a facility that is suits for delivery of babies. So it's just a reflection of the current healthcare system in our nation at the moment, which is on the verge of a collapse. So people seeking alternative health methods, we call upon the responsible authorities to act on the situation with the agents that it deserves.
Zimbabwe's doctors and nurses want the government to provide modern equipment to clinics and hospitals, which have deteriorated along with the country's economy. The World Bank expects Zimbabwe's gross domestic product to shrink by 7.5% in 2019. George Guamatanga, Secretary for the Ministry of Finance and Economic Development, says Harare is aware of the healthcare problems and that the government is working to address the issues.
We are very much on top of the situation within the health sector and within the education sector. We are working closely with the Ministry of Health to make sure that the adequate and sustainable resources as required by the doctors are provided.
Meanwhile, expectant mothers in Zimbabwe are doing the best they can. Columbus Mafunga for VOA News, Harare.
Ghana's Year of Return tourism campaign has helped to boost international arrivals to the country by 26%. The campaign is tied to the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first African slaves to what is now the United States. Mavis Autry in Washington has more.
By September, 7,336,000 international travelers had arrived in Ghana this year. That's up to 560,000 in September last year. The Ghana Tourism Authority celebrated the Year of Return, Ghana 2019, as a spiritual and a birthright journey. The authority invited the global African family, both from overseas and from elsewhere on the continent, to mark 400 years since the arrival of the first enslaved Africans in the Virginia colony. The Year of Return celebrates the resilience of the victims of the transatlantic slave trade who were scattered and displayed through to North America, South America, the Caribbean, Europe, and Asia. Many of them were forced onto slave ships from Ghana. The Tourism Authority worked with the Office of Diaspora Affairs, the Panafest Foundation, and the Edinkra Group, a company focusing on African culture and travel. One of the main goals of the Year of Return is to position Ghana as a key travel destination for African Americans and the diaspora. Ghana Tourism Chief Akwesi Ajiman says media support and celebrity endorsements for the celebration has been overwhelming. He says now the Ghana Tourism Authority is looking at how to build on gains from this year.
Use the Year of Return as the starting point. So what we are working on now is a project that goes beyond the return, looking at five key pillars. One of the pillars is investment. We know that we've invited the global African family to come to Ghana and also be part of the rebuilding effort. To do that, we need to look at the investment projects and products that we have.
For instance, he says the government wants to overhaul the foreign direct investment laws to find ways to encourage investments by the African diaspora. He says following President Nana Akufo-Addo's visit to the Caribbean to promote the Year of Return, Barbados produced a movie called Joseph, which will premiere in Ghana December. It will open worldwide in January. He says the two countries also signed an agreement to establish a sister port relations to help expand trade between the two countries and the Caribbean and Latin America. They also signed an agreement for Ghana to send nurses to work in Barbados. Ajiman says the Tourism Authority is working with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to improve the visa process. He noted that some people from the diaspora have questioned why they should go through the country's elaborate visa process if Ghana really wants them to visit. He says the government also is doing background checks and vetting for some members of the diaspora that have applied for Ghanaian citizenship.
Throughout the Year of Return, we managed to get the visa on arrival figures reduced from $150 to $75. But it doesn't end there. We want to make it pretty much easier for people to visit. Then we talk about the issue of citizenship. A lot of our brothers who are coming back say, look, I don't want to just visit. I want to come home. This is where my ancestors came from. I want to be a Ghanaian.
The president this year said the government would facilitate the granting of citizenship to about 200 people. Ajiman says many of the members of the diaspora who visited Ghana were there to explore the potential on the continent, and this is an opportunity for Ghanaians to position themselves to take advantage of it. Reporting for the VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, also known as MONUSCO, has appealed for calm and responsibility as violent protests continue in the town of Beni in the northeastern part of the country. This after protesters stormed the UN offices in Beni on Monday, angered by UN failure to stop an armed group that killed 8 civilians on Sunday. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
South Sudan's president and chief rebel leader postponed the formation of a unity government for another 100 days. Inside the political turmoil in South Sudan, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.